Please refrain from talking when the movie show is playing and the people in the front are cracking wise, because that's our job. We're down in front, yes, that's our name, it's who we are, not what we do. In fact, we may stand up and take a bow at you. Yell, down in front!
Down in front!
Good evening, my name is Michael Albright, and thank you for joining Down in Front for our ostensibly monthly podcast, The Lobby. We're about to do our cinematic rehabilitation of 1999's The Mummy with Brendan Fraser, and so we went looking for someone personally affected by the movie to talk about it. So let me introduce tonight's guest, friend of the show, Eileen Tull, who sat in with us when we were writing our treatment of Congo. She performed around Chicago with a one-woman show called Bad Dates, in which everyone she's ever dated pales in comparison to Harrison Ford, and also alongside us at the last Abbey Fest with a one-act in which the moon's avatar, Nicolas Cage, visits her on a beach. Thank you for joining us, Eileen.
Thank you for having me.
So we're talking right now because you had an interesting personal connection to The Mummy, so let's start with that.
Yes. Well, I loved The Mummy when I first saw it. I don't even think I saw it in theaters, but I started watching it when it came onto TV. It was one of those things that was always on the Encore channel, like 15 times in a row. So my older brother and I would watch it maybe, you know, four times in a row when it was on. I just really love it. And I feel like it is such a well-made action adventure movie.
Sure, you know, it's pretty solid.
Yeah, I think that now we see a lot of superhero movies and we also see a lot of action movies. And I feel like this one kind of did a great job of having there be action adventure and then the sort of mystical force and the romance, the thrilling intrigue and all that stuff. So I just have always loved it. And the follow-up, Mummy Returns, is, you know, not as good, but it's still a...
Okay.
Yeah, it's still a valid movie. So what I did is what any sort of really cool, really popular, like A-list type of, I think, middle schooler would do in Cincinnati, Ohio, you know, like all the cool kids in class were doing, which was write a screenplay treatment for a third Mummy movie.
Like you do.
And at that point, they hadn't announced the, you know, the actual third Mummy movie, which is not canon in my Mummy life.
Hashtag not my threequel.
Exactly. Not my Evie. So I wrote out a treatment. I mean, it's like on loose leaf paper, and I'm sure it's, you know, at this point, my parents have long thrown it away with all my other really great ideas and really successful screenplay treatments. Thanks, Mom and Dad.
I was wondering if you still have it.
I wish. I mean, if I did, it would be on my fridge because I know I worked really hard on it. I mean, I must say there's a lot that is lost to memory, but I did a lot of the math because the thing with The Mummy is that I believe that The Mummy Returns takes place in the mid-1930s.
Sounds about right.
Yeah, and I was like, well, you can't... My whole theory was... I mean, obviously I was writing the screenplay because I loved the franchise, but also this would give me a good opportunity to star in one of the Mummy movies.
Well, sure.
You know, I mean, you're not going to write a screenplay at 14 and not put yourself in it. I mean, you know, that would be foolish. So I did the math in terms of how old young Alex would be. Would he be of marriageable age? And then, you know, because I figured the movie would be tied up in pre-production for a few years and we'd be getting funding. I was honestly like this cool of a kid.
I looked. He's about 4 years older than you.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was like, okay, I mean, we got to figure out like that. And then you had to take into account the war and where we would be in terms of our global, you know, the militarization.
Sure.
So there was a lot that I was taking into account. But my basic idea was that I would be playing the Egyptologist's daughter. So the Egyptologist from the first Mummy movie, he was the guy that was played by the guy that played Van Pelt in Jumanji and also Alan Parrish's dad.
Okay.
Dual role. So I don't know this poor man's name, but I always just call him Van Pelt. and he, so I was like, I'll be his daughter. And I practiced my British accent. And I had really what I had was the first scene was like them in their mansion, and then it's raining, of course, and I come in, like someone comes in, they don't know who it is, and it's, you know, she's in like a, you know, like a Casablanca trench coat and hat, and it's very dramatic and knocking on the door, and then I just remember being like, this moment is golden, where I would like pull up the brim of my hat that I was wearing, and that the young 17, 18 year old Alex would see me, and we would both have that like moment of, you know, where you're like, oh, these two characters are going to fall in love. And then it went on to, and then I honestly, the plot of it, I don't quite remember what I had foreseen. Just because it was really important to me to be in the movie and then to be a love interest. So those were the two main things I was doing. But yeah, it was basically like, okay, like let's get Arnold Vosloo back to be the mummy again somehow.
Sure.
And like, let's get, you know, the same cast of characters doing the same thing.
They already did it twice.
Yeah. I was like, why not a third time?
What's a third time?
So yeah. And then, you know, I'd like to say that I went to LA and pitched it to some people, but no, I stayed in Cincinnati, Ohio, and I graduated middle school. So,
and Cincinnati, not the movie capital of the world yet.
No, not quite. I mean, Emilio Estevez is there, and he's, you know, he's given a lot of my friends, you know, extra work, which is great. But,
well, there's, you know, that
the Lachey brothers have a bar there, so hey, you know, yeah, Cincinnati's not nothing, folks. They filmed a couple scenes of Carol there, so we're very exciting.
What about the movie drove you to write your own sequel? Was it a crush on, well, presumably not the son, maybe more the Brendan Fraser character himself?
Oh yeah, Brendan Fraser was quite the. The late 90s dish. I mean, you know, George of the Jungle was like the first time I'd seen a man that naked for that long. Like, it was intense. I mean, in his look, I'm a very well-read, sophisticated lady, but Brendan Fraser's body in George of the Jungle is sick. Like, he is. He is
for the ladies.
It's true. I'm like, watch out for that tree. No, that's a really stupid line. Cut that one out. Cut that out. We don't need to.
I don't think I want to.
Oh no.
You know, we make that joke all the damn time. It's fine. It's fine.
But no, I mean, it was like, and there's a scene where he like he's in a towel and he drops his towel and I guess he covers his, what I then did not understand was his penis, with a bowl or something. I don't know. I just remember being like, I feel weird watching this, but in like a happy way, like a warm way, which is how I still describe sexual feelings. But he's so great in George of the Jungle, and he was so great in Blast from the Past, and he was just like, he was sort of everywhere for a little while. And I was just watching an interview, this interview with Charlie Rose, like at the time of The Mummy, and I think he was like 29 or something, or like he was just 30 when they filmed The Mummy, which now I'm like that age, and it's blowing my mind, because I'm like, no, Rick was like this, like, man, he's not like anyone my age. He's a timeless man.
You want your mind really to be blown?
Yeah, blow it.
Tom Cruise about to star in The Mummy remake. He's in his 50, I think he's 55 this year.
No, but he's not really, because of all the blood he's been drinking of young, you know, animals and children. So.
Doesn't count. Okay.
Right. Yeah. He's, Tom Cruise. yeah, Tom Cruise is just, man, every time I see that preview and he just starts screaming, I'm like, I can't take it seriously. And also because I know, you know, he's an alien. I mean, you know, you're just kind of like, he's put on his human suit every day and he's like, here I come. But anyway, yeah, I was way into Rick O'Connell. I mean, it's that whole archetype of, I mean, it's very, very traditional in that he's, you know, tall and masculine, and he's a little rough around the edges, and then he meets like a sort of a straight-laced brunette who sort of gets him to settle down a little bit. I mean, it's
Being an indie type doesn't hurt.
Yeah, being an Indiana Jones, sort of Han Solo, like that pattern is something I'm very interested in. And it's, I'm always like, yeah, my dad is a tall 6'4" built football player. My mom's a short brunette. Why? Why do you ask? What does that have anything to do with anything? But yeah, so and I just love the like swashbuckling aspect to it. I don't know. So I just like it when it's a little more rough and tumble.
So where then do you think Freddie Boeth? I don't know.
I don't know either.
The kid who played Alex, where does he rank on a scale from not Harrison Ford to Harrison Ford?
Well, wait, is this the kid from...
Well, all right, the kid to middle school Eileen.
Oh, to middle school Eileen. Even he was a bit young for me, like age-wise.
4 years older than you.
4 years older. But I don't know. He seemed like a kid in that movie.
True.
Well, and he was blonde, right?
I believe so.
Yeah, I've never been into blonde men. They're always, because it's like, I've seen enough movies about Nazis and enough, like, you know, movies where, like in, I don't know, something like Die Hard, where that's all the henchmen are these big blonde, you know, European villains. Yeah, not into blonde dudes, almost like, almost as a rule, you know, there are some, Greg Kinnear, there are some people who can challenge that. But yeah, I mean, and what do you like? As if I'm gonna be looking at anyone else when Brendan Fraser's running around. I mean, honestly.
So nearly Harrison Ford on Brendan Fraser.
I feel like the Mummy Brendan Fraser is he approaches the extreme. You know what I mean?
I do.
Yeah, he's like a stop along the way.
He plays it well. I always felt like. I always felt like he kind of played the role as though it were supposed to be Harrison Ford cast in it. I always like seeing that because it's kind of Hollywood doing fantasy casting. Another instance of that would be, have you seen Hansel and Gretel?
No.
Jeremy Renner and I forget who else.
Oh, right. I have seen that. Yeah.
Looking at it, I thought it was going to be the dumbest movie. I actually sat down and watched it and I realized this movie was written for Bruce Campbell. But he's too old to play it.
Yes.
So Jeremy Renner is playing young Bruce Campbell in that movie, and that makes it all better.
It's true, and you're just like, oh, okay, that's who this like this type is, and you just channel that person, and it's like, all right. I mean, you know, dumb example because it's so obvious, but it's like Ewan McGregor channeling Alec Guinness. It's like that's such a place to start. For the prequels, but he does such a good job with it. I mean, I know it's kind of, he's supposed to be doing an impression-ish, whatever, but it's like, I feel like Ewan McGregor really grounds it, you know?
So if you were to write it again today with yourself in the same role, only your current age, and presumably Alex as well, where do you think you'd hang on to the romantic angle?
Oh, I mean, I'm sure I would just because that's my jam is...
You're romantic.
Yeah, I'm a very hopefully hopeless romantic. And I love romance and action movies, just like sexual tension among these crazy circumstances. You know, like the movie Speed. I love that. I love their little like romantic
connection. So you're
connection.
The sucker.
Oh, I am totally the sucker. The end of Tremors. Oh, my God. I love it in Tremors. It's so good.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, I love that kind of crap because it, and when it's done well, it doesn't distract from the story. Like, it doesn't distract from the adventure or the motive, you know, or the goal they have to accomplish.
Yeah.
It's just kind of like, oh, I guess we're accidentally falling in love while running away from these giant, you know, worms under the desert floor. And that I love, you know, I mean, I think that's the line in Speed, like people who, you know, fall in love in extreme situations, it never works out or whatever they say. But, cause I always feel like it propels the story forward and, you know, and as long as they don't suck it up like they do in Transformers and that kind of garbage where it's like all sexiness and not heart and
no actual passion or drive, just
right, or like, or admiration for each other, or you know, and I think in a lot of these movies too, they don't I mean, it's all damsel in distress. It's like no female empowerment. You know, sometimes a woman picks up a sword and then she gets flung away and that kind of crap. But
yeah, credit where it's due. Evie is she holds her own.
She does, and it is her skills as a librarian that pay off. You know, she's the one that finds, you know, can read the script to find where the other book is.
Right.
And, you know, she's the one that, like, she's doing things. And, yeah, she needs to get saved and whatever, but even when Jonathan's reading the book, she's the one that's translated. You know, there's things that she's doing to save herself and other people. So I feel like that's... I would definitely keep in the romantic angle, again, cast myself. And I feel like, yeah, I haven't seen the actual third Mummy movie, which I was not consulted about.
Right.
And so I would, you know, kind of, that's not canon to me. The Scorpion King movie.
Their loss, huh?
Yeah, exactly. I was like, look.
Or the world's loss.
Right. Film history's loss.
So... Is this script your first major creative endeavor, or had you been trying to put things to paper or other media before that?
I mean, I grew up in a super creative family. I have my oldest brother is an actor, and my dad likes to say that he was the only... My dad likes to say about himself that he was the only Notre Dame football player who was also in the Glee Club, which I'm pretty sure he could, you know, that could very well be true. Right. A claim to fame. So, you know, creativity and performance was always really encouraged in my family. You know, my great grandfather was a Broadway actor back in the day. Yeah. Complete narcissist and alcoholic. So thanks for those genetics. But yeah, so we've got a lot of performance in the family, and so we were always encouraged to be performing and to be, you know, writing skits and performing little Christmas plays and being in the church plays and things like that. So we had been doing a lot of that since I was born. But there is one time a little before this whole kind of mummy screenplay treatment, my two older brothers and I tried to theatricalize the original Star Wars trilogy.
Oh.
We figured no one else had done it. Like,
sure.
Yeah, they're really missing out on this opportunity. So that what they need are, like, you know, three elementary school kids from Ohio, you know, need to be the ones to do it. So we wrote out.
It's got three solid acts.
I know, exactly. It's a good, you know, it'd be a good stage version, because we knew we couldn't get the funding to film it, but we thought we could totally do it on a stage very well. And I grew up with two older brothers, and I have three younger brothers and a younger sister, but my two older brothers and I, there's a big age gap, so we really grew up together, and we always sort of played the combinations of three, you know, we were Yakko, Wakko, and Dot, mm-hmm. Han, Luke, and Leia, you know, all those sort of classic, like, two men and a lady combinations. So I was Leia, and we wrote out the entire script of New Hope. We just watched the movie over and over again and paused it, you know, in our parents' bedroom where they had the VCR. And so we would watch it, pause it. We'd all write down in our little subject notebooks.
You got to go back and make sure you heard what they said right.
Right, right. And we were like, we got to get this word perfect. If we don't get a word perfect, they'll be very upset. They won't be, you know, litigious about anything else.
Some people would be upset about that.
Yeah, it's true. And so we wrote out the whole thing, and we were like, okay, we can figure out how we can do this.
Nerf herder. Yeah. Nerf herder.
Hyphen herder. Like, it's a compound. Come on, guys. But then we started with Empire, because we were like, great, we've got New Hope. It's like huge notebooks full of dialogue. And we start with Empire, and then as soon as Luke and Leia have that upsetting kiss, all of us were like, oh, yeah, that's right. We totally forgot that part of it. And this
we're
isn't.
Done.
Yeah, this is done. We are out of this. And yeah, so that script got lost in development hell. but that was a sort of my first attempt at, adapting a screenplay for the stage.
All right. Did you ever see the Donnie and Marie Star Wars episode?
No.
Oh, look for it. It is, they play Luke and Leia, another set of siblings with awkward sexual chemistry.
Come on, Donnie and Marie. Come on, guys.
It's perfect. And you know what? You want to know who plays Han Solo?
Tell me.
It's Kris Kristofferson.
Oh.
And he sings.
Oh, of course he does. Oh, my gosh. No, I mean, I used to watch a ton of old TV growing up, and I... Like it had to be explained to me several times that Donnie and Marie weren't married, several times throughout my life, and I'm still kind of like, I think they're married.
I don't doubt it. Like, it's, I don't. I
like, just go for it, guys. You know, just you crazy kids, just go for it. But yeah,
it would not be the weirdest thing Mormons in public have done.
Yeah, you know what I mean. At this point, it's like, all right, like that's the least weird thing about you guys.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us and sharing your connection with our next cinematic rehabilitation.
Yeah.
I hope to see you there.
Yes.
And there you have it. As always, it was a delight having Eileen come by. If you're interested in more from her, you can follow her on Twitter at Tully23. That's T-U-L-L-I-E-23. Her regular feed is Great Stuff, and of course, she'll post any upcoming projects she has, and so will we. If you're hearing this soon after its release, don't forget to join us at North Bar for The Mummy on May 9th, 2017 at 8:15 p.m., and if you missed that, follow us on Facebook or Twitter at Down In Front Live or on our website, downinfrontlive.com. I'm Michael Albright, and thank you once again for listening to
Down in Front.